Hello. Thanks for downloading this podcast from the NewsHour Extra team. It's me in the chair this week, Rebecca Kesby, and our topic of discussion is Zimbabwe. And this is because there have been all sorts of protests on the streets and mounting challenges, really, to the leadership of Robert Mugabe. Now, it's quite a long time since I was last in Zimbabwe. It's quite difficult to get hold of a visa, especially if you're a BBC journalist, I notice. I was very lucky this week because I got to speak to Thomas Mfumo, who I remember watching at Turtles Nightclub back in the mid-90s, it must have been now. Fantastic live. And we get to speak to him this week. Piers Lynch was editing this week's programme. And Piers, you've been battling with some pretty major technical difficulties, I understand.
Yeah, it's not an easy place to, to get to as a BBC journalist, and not an easy place to produce an hour-long discussion from as a BBC journalist in London. But we battled through and managed to get some really interesting voices inside the country. And, a place that feels like it's on the cusp of something changing, with Robert Mugabe being 92 years old, this sort of fresh spirit of protest from the young and engaged, rather like our intern this week.
Yes. Rebecca Lee, you join us as an intern this week. Thanks for your help.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. I've definitely been thrown in at the deep end there, yeah.
Have we been nice to you? This is key.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah. What do you think you learned from this week?
I think this week's been particularly interesting, getting really across the idea of, I know when we were ringing up some of the panellists, it was the whole idea, they're not sure if this is a turning point, but it definitely feels like it's coming up to one. And I think just getting across that that fresh sense of really coming out against Mugabe that seemed quite prevalent when we were looking online, yeah.
OK, so we've got lots of strong opinions on the programme, both sides on this discussion coming your way. If you stay with us for the next hour or so, our question this week, Zimbabwe, what happens after Robert Mugabe? Hello, you're with NewsHour Extra from the BBC World Service, this week with me, Rebecca Kesby. Now, when Robert Mugabe was swept to power in the first democratic elections enjoyed by a free Zimbabwe, there was a confident optimism about the country. 36 years later, amid a deepening economic crisis, food shortages and chronic unemployment, momentum is growing against him in a new wave of protests, public sector strikes and civil disobedience. Demonstrators on the streets of the capital Harare this week, lots of them draped in the Zimbabwean flag, carrying placards demanding that Mr. Mugabe goes. But he has survived many attempts to oust him from power over the years and has always maintained a strong base of popularity, particularly in the rural areas. But is that changing now? In recent weeks, several leaders in the powerful War Veterans Group have told him to stand down. Civil servants have been on strike. And even though he has vowed to lead Zimbabwe until his death, at the age of 92, even his most ardent supporters are having to consider what happens after Mugabe. Who will take power and what will they do with it? Well, with us to discuss what happens next in the country, once known as the breadbasket of Southern Africa, now described to me this week by one commentator as being in a dangerously fluid situation. On the line from Harare, we have Fadzaye Meheri, a barrister, a self-proclaimed feminist and a keen observer of the recent protests. We have Tafadzawa Masarara, who's the former Secretary General of the Affirmative Action Group, which supports local business initiatives in Zimbabwe. He's also a strong supporter of the governing ZANU-PF. Joining us on the line from Durban in South Africa is Wilf Mbanga, who's a journalist now living there in South Africa after being declared an enemy of the people in his native Zimbabwe. He's the founder, editor and publisher of The Zimbabwean. And here in the studio with me, Alex Magisa, who's a lawyer and a lecturer in law at the University of Kent and former legal advisor to the Zimbabwean Prime Minister during the unity government after 2009. And a brief question, really, to begin. Is what's happening in Zimbabwe with the recent protest groups, including this flag and Tajamuka, which roughly translates to let's take action or outrage. Is this different now from other protest groups we've seen before in Zimbabwe? Fadzai, you've been watching all of this there in Harare.
Yes, I definitely think it is different, Rebecca. And I think what's unique about the new movement or the new wave of protests, in fact, I won't call it a wave, I'll call it a sea of protests, is the fact that it's led by the people. You will note that a lot of people are jaded by the politics of this country. A lot of people feel let down, not only by the ruling party, but by some of the more formal opposition groups as well. So what you see now is a more coming together of ordinary people and speaking out against what they believe is injustice, speaking out against corruption, speaking out against poverty, and speaking out in a manner that has hitherto not been seen. People are taking advantage as well of social media in order to air their views and to gather, to really rally around this new movement.
Okay. Tafadzwa, do you agree with that? What's your take on these recent protests?
Firstly, I would just to make a comment regarding the composition of this panel, and these are sentiments being shared with my fellow colleagues within the revolutionary movement. I have, of course, the other three fellow prominent educated Zimbabweans, but who are also recorded anti-Mugabe activists, and I only have myself. So really, the composition of this panel is not fair, and the violation of the BBC charter here is very apparent.
Okay, but you're here. Let's hear your view. I mean, that's why it's so important to hear your voice. We have seen Mr. Mugabe come under pressure before from protests. Are these different?
Well, my understanding of the current situation is that we have a popcorn protests that are occurring around the country. Since the formation of MDC, it has over the years had only about 1.2 to 1.3 million support. It's important this protest allowed to proceed. It's a vindication on the part of the revolutionary parties, ZANU-PF, to allow this protest, and also it's good for the courts to pass judgments to allow this protest to occur and allow people to exercise their fundamental rights to freedom of expression. The issues that are being brought by the protesters here are issues that already our government did identified that these are problem areas that needs attention. And if you look at some of our countries, like for instance Malawi, 75% of their budget is donor funded. So we don't have that international support. So we have this challenge, the government is working on it, and the issues being raised by protests are definitely genuine. However, it is the issue of whether you expect that the exit of President Robert Mugabe will solve problems. You know, which has to be constitutional, the one, the mandate to rule until 2018, and that mandate can be taken away other than within the constitutional means.
Okay, so these protests are all just part of a normal democratic process, you're saying?
Yes, it's important that these protests are allowed, people are allowed to venge their anger. But look, we have elections, we have held elections, we have 2018 elections coming, and everyone will have an opportunity to express their vote in regards to who should govern. But otherwise, we mustn't be foolish to anticipate that the protests on their own will be able to remove or force President Robert Mugabe out of office. That okay. won't happen.
Now, the crackdown on political dissenters, the economic crisis has led to between 500,000 and 4 million Zimbabweans leaving the country, we're told. No one really knows the exact figure. It is a sizable diaspora, let's just say that. One of the most famous expats is now living in the States. He's musician Thomas Mpfumo. He's affectionately known as the Lion of Zimbabwe because it was his political folk music banned by the white government back in the 70s that used to inspire Zimbabwean fighters as they tuned in to Mozambican radio stations to hear it back then. He's also played at the concert in Harare to celebrate Mr. Mugabe's victory back in 1980, but he has since then been very outspoken against Mr. Mugabe for years. He's now thrown his weight behind the This Flag campaign, and he told me why.
Mugabe was a very ambitious man. You can imagine somebody who can walk from Zimbabwe to Mozambique to claim, I mean, the leadership of the guerrillas. This man wasn't actually the right man to be the president of Zimbabwe, because he himself is a divisionist. He divided our people. Brothers and sisters are divided. We are living in the States. Some are living in Australia. Some are in the UK. I'm a musician myself. When I used to come to UK, I used to play for white audience. You understand? And today, when I come to UK, I'm playing for my own people from home. And that's not good for me. People are crying foul. Their children are not going to school. Zimbabwe has no money because of Mugabe, because of his arrogance. He doesn't want to listen to other people. If you fought for the people, why are our people suffering today? Today, the people have decided to take the matters into their own hands. Politicians have failed us. And this is why there is flag movement. It's for the people. It's not a party. It's a movement now. The people, they are saying enough is enough. We want to take our country back.
The Lion of Zimbabwe, Thomas Mapfumo there, and some of his lovely music, of course. Wilf Mbanga listening in from Durban. I think you were at that concert that we mentioned when Mr. Mugabe came to power back in 1980. What was the mood then? Because you were quite good friends with Mr. Mugabe back then.
I was. I had met him in 1974 when he came out of prison. I interviewed him because I was working for South African newspapers, you know, the Johannesburg Star. And when I interviewed him, he was different from all the other former political detainees. He was talking about an independent Zimbabwe where there would be no racial discrimination, where there would be, you know, where everybody would be allowed to develop their talents. And I felt that this man was different from all the others. You know, he had a clear idea of what Zimbabwe should be like. I was a great supporter of his for many years. But over the years, he's allowed corruption. He's allowed economic mismanagement. And I always say, fish rots from the head. And that is why people are now saying that he should go. Not because they don't like the man or that he's old, but the fact that, you know, he has not dealt with corruption, he's not dealt with political mismanagement, economic mismanagement, and so on.
Yeah, I suppose the trouble with being in power for so long is that people do forget where you started from. And it is worth remembering that Robert Mugabe, who was imprisoned by the white minority government for most of the 60s and the early 70s, he led the struggle against the regime. He was so intelligent, eloquent. He was, and still is considered by many, an African hero. Here's a clip of him speaking in 1980. This is just as he prepared to become the first Prime Minister of Zimbabwe.
I urge you, whether you are black or white, to join me in a new pledge to forget our grim past. Forgive others and forget. Join hands in a new amity, and together as Zimbabweans, trample upon racialism, tribalism and regionalism.
So Alex Magisa here with me in the studio. Regionally, Zimbabwe was so important back in those days as a leader, and it still is, isn't it? Why so? How does it influence Southern Africa?
Well, a point of response to one of my panelists here. I don't think that it is correct to say that the government is allowing people to exercise their constitutional rights. Because as we have seen, for example, with the beatings and assaults of protesters, that is a clear indication of a government that is still intolerant. It may be that it's because of the contradictions within ZANU-PF itself, where there are some reformers who are willing to allow protests, but there are also some retrogressive elements which are trying to stifle the tolerance. So that's an issue that I thought I should point out. But in regards to your specific question, Zimbabwe is a very important country for the Southern African region. It's one of the countries which has been at the forefront alongside South Africa, was a big economic power, very well developed when it got independence in 1980, and was very attractive to investors as well as to other countries in the region. Indeed, many countries in the region, President Nyerere of Tanzania called it the jewel of Africa and asked Mr. Mugabe to look after it. So there was a lot of promise to Zimbabwe in regards to what it could do, what it could deliver as a leader. And it was a leader for many years until, of course, it began to decline in the late 1990s to have a huge record of mega hyperinflation in 2008.
And its economic problems also has a spin-off, doesn't it, regionally?
Absolutely. The economic challenges that Zimbabwe has faced has meant that lots of Zimbabweans have had to escape and go to South Africa and go to Botswana. And of course, that becomes a big social burden and economic burden on those countries.
We're talking about the economic challenges facing Zimbabwe. Of course, the Zim dollar has been suspended. That was after the hyperinflation. Zimbabwe now functions mainly using the US dollar, sometimes the South African rand, even the euro, I'm told, is sometimes used for trading purposes. The government says it wants to introduce bond notes later this year. This is a sort of alternative to real money, but it would have no value, I understand, outside Zimbabwe. It's a deeply unpopular move in some quarters, it seems, certainly with the protesters. Fadze Meheri, what's your take on the bond notes idea, and how's it going down there in Harare?
I think it's critical to point out from the outset that there's no legal framework whatsoever that enables the governor of the Reserve Bank, as he plans to do, to introduce bond notes. This is compounded by the fact that the Constitution of Zimbabwe, particularly Section 68, enjoins the governor of the Reserve Bank to act in a manner that's lawful. In other words, any measure he seeks to introduce has to have the force of law. So what's being asked of Zimbabweans is to accept this bond note on the back of a very hyperinflationary and unstable period economically in Zimbabwe, which is still extremely fresh in everybody's memory. Everybody knows what it means when our government is empowered to print money. Whenever they run out of it, they print a whole lot more. And nobody needs any sort of introduction to the hyperinflationary mess that was created in Zimbabwe in the period really at its peak, 2007, 2008. So people are very, very opposed to these bond notes.
OK, I want to put that to Fadzwa there, because the government simply can't deny the criticism over its handling of the economy, can it? I mean, the foreign debt's worth around $8 billion. One statistic puts unemployment at 90%. I mean, that sounds a bit high, but anyway, unemployment's a real problem. The UN recently said that one-third of the country is reliant on food aid. And yet earlier this year, Robert Mugabe spent around $800,000 on his own birthday party. I mean, that is his economic record is indefensible, isn't it?
Let me start by commenting on the issues of the bond notes. In my other life, I'm an industrialist, and I also lead the food industry in this country. And we were very instrumental in the introduction and acceptance of the bond notes when, among other things, we caused the reduction of prices of bread, and there was a deflation in a number of other basic commodities. Every year, or nearly every day, we have had a massive outflow of US dollar cash. We are using the strongest currency in the Southern Hemisphere. And therefore, any economy in the world will be very keen to supply to Zimbabwe and obtain currency from Zimbabwe. To the extent that we have had a number of South Africans coming here, flying in, just going on the ATM, drawing as much US dollars with the international cards and leave the country. So in order to cure that, we agreed, businesses endorse this. We don't want a situation whereby, you know, our own currency can be shipped out. We need a float that has to stay in the country. The challenge that we have in Zimbabwe is that we are having protests. We need people who will be able to oppose an idea and offer a solution. We don't have money. You know, when people pay taxes, they pay as a big transfers. When those taxes are now used to pay for salaries, okay, there is no cash.
Even so, though, you have to accept that this government has not tackled the economic problems sufficiently.
Every economy in the Southern Africa has the same problems. Others receive international support. But because we don't have that international support like what Malawi, Zambia, Botswana, Mozambique receive.
Okay, that's a fair point, isn't it? Wilf Mbanga, you're there in South Africa, and the whole region has suffered from the drought that's been going on, and then floods in various areas. Lots of Southern African governments have got problems connected to that.
Right. And why is Zimbabwe in a worse situation than the rest? The problem is that our government is clueless. They have got no idea how to solve the economic problems that they have created. The major problem we have in Zimbabwe is that, the government does not truly identify or diagnose a problem. If you've got TB and you tell yourself, oh, I've got a cough, and you treat yourself for a cough, you're not going to get better. And that same is happening in Zimbabwe today. They blame everything on, what they call sanctions from the international community, which don't really exist. And they blame everybody else.
So what is the root then of that cough, to use your analogy? Where's the root? What do they need to do?
It's economic mismanagement. They need to get the fundamentals correct. They overspend. They have got too many people in the civil service.
Let me bring in Alex, because he's nodding vigorously, Wilf, as he's listening to you here in London. Alex.
Look, I think the problem that we have with our government is that it does not admit to failure. It does not admit to weaknesses. There is always somebody to blame. It's either the worst, it's sanctions, it's drought, it's the region. They never accept responsibility, which is quite odd for a government. One of the things that they don't do is consultation. The point that has been raised by Fadzai is that this bond notes issue is not legal. There was no consultation before the event. They only decided to announce on May 4 what they were going to do. And this was a shock to the people.
There's a lot of discussion about how the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, should or should not be involved in helping Zimbabwe at this stage. There's talks going on. What's your take on that at the moment?
It's an absolutely important issue because, on the one hand, Zimbabwe is going through a very difficult economic situation. But at the same time, you have to ask the question whether or not this government can be trusted. Is it capable of using those resources prudently in order to make Zimbabwe better, not in the short term, but in the long run? My concern is that there should never be a situation where the international community incentivizes corruption, incentivizes profligacy, and encourages wastage by this regime. We Zimbabweans are caught in a moral dilemma. We obviously don't want to be saying that our people should suffer, but at the same time, we should not be encouraging the kind of system that we have at the moment.
Okay, a quick response there from Tafadzwa.
I want to quote what the former Assistant Secretary of State, Mr. Croker, said. In order to separate the people of Zimbabwe from ZANU-PF, you need to make the economy scream. And this is a recorded statement that was made by the former U.S. State Secretary, Mr. Croker. We are now seeing the manifestation of that plan, that definitely there was an external force to make our economy scream. We are in this situation largely because of external influence. The issues of corruption, mismanagement, those are prevalent. We are fully aware of that, and also found in other jurisdictions. Personally, I think they have to be arrested. But we cannot deny that there are sanctions in Zimbabwe. It's as good as denying that it's during the day when you are having lunch.
So you suspect a plot then, really, an international plot against the government in Zimbabwe. You're referring to Chester Crocker there, the Assistant Secretary of State for Africa under, I think it was, the Reagan administration in the States some years ago. Hello, you're listening to NewsHour Extra from the BBC World Service with me, Rebecca Kesby. This week, we're looking at Zimbabwe. Robert Mugabe and his government are under pressure again. But is it different this time? Will a popular movement see the end of one of Africa's longest ruling leaders? Or will it be God and God alone that will remove him from power, as Mr. Mugabe has insisted himself? We're joined from Harare by Tafadzwa Musarara, who's a strong supporter of the governing ZANU-PF party. Fadzai Meheri is a barrister and one of the professionals backing the recent protests in the country. Joining us on the line from Durban in South Africa, Wilf Mbanga, who's a Zimbabwean journalist and editor of The Zimbabwean. And here in the studio with me, Alex Magisa, who's a lawyer and lecturer in law at the University of Kent. Now, earlier in the programme, we talked about the vast economic problems facing the country. Coming up, we'll talk about who is positioning themselves now to take power. But first, let's hear more on those protests and civil disobedience that seems to have been gaining momentum in recent months. Two of the organisers of the online Tajamuka campaign, an umbrella organisation pulling together various different anti-government movements, are Promise Mkwananzi and Joanna Mamombe, and they told us what their aims are.
It's time for young people to come together and speak with one voice as citizens of the country against misgovernance, against corruption, against impunity and immunity which is in this country. And obviously the increase in the availability of social media, access to social media, has been very instrumental in galvanizing the voices of the various protests that you have seen taking place that we coordinate here in Zimbabwe.
We've been oppressed enough. Time for us to speak up, to rise up and stand for what rightfully belongs to us. I feel that most of my generation, they are intimidated to stand up and speak for themselves. So I feel that I can speak on behalf of them. I can be the voice of the voiceless. So that is what is motivating me. And even the situation here in Zimbabwe, this is the time for us to push and to fight for our Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe is a great country with great potential, but that potential has been dimmed by President Mugabe's misgovernance, corruption, and so on and so forth. So we, as young people, believe that if they step aside, we can put our hands together and rebuild our country.
There are other issues that are directly affecting us as the young women and as the young people in general here in Zimbabwe. The issues of unemployment. We feel that the government of Zimbabwe needs to deliver the 2.2 million jobs that they promised to us. So we are saying that it is the time for them to provide employment or for them to step down. We are standing right beside the Parliament of Zimbabwe, and my dream and hope is that one day I'll be sitting in that parliament and implementing what the people are demanding right today, and also representing the interests of the young people, because we feel that this Robert Mugabe generation, they don't know our issues, they don't understand our interests. So I feel that I should be in that parliament representing the interests of my generation today.
Two of the organisers there of the recent protests, and Fadzai Meheri, you're a barrister, professional woman. I think you were involved in at least one of those protests in recent days. Do you think a popular uprising of some sort, or these strikes, are capable of taking power from an elite which is so entrenched and so successful at keeping hold of power in Zimbabwe?
I'd like to make it clear from the onset that it's not as though the people want to unseat the president in a manner that's contrary to the law or unconstitutional. All that we are doing as people is exercising our right as set out in the Constitution to challenge the government, to challenge its policies, to challenge the ruling party, the ZANU-PF party. That's all these protests are. It's people who are coming together and speaking out for the first time in decades and telling the government that, look, enough is enough. You can't lie to us. You can't steal from us. You can't take advantage of us. That's what the people have come together to say. And every time this is done, contrary to what Mr. Msarara said, you know, the president comes out and unleashes the police. The president just the other week called people who are speaking out against the government enemies, enemies of the state. One of us, Pastor Ivan Mawarire, ordinary citizen, ordinary leader of a church who was speaking out against the government, was hounded out and told never to come back and issued with so many threats.
Okay.
I think this is deeply regrettable because all the people are doing is exercising their right to protest and to tell the government that, look, we are not happy with the situation and we'd like a better Zimbabwe.
And Alex Magisa, the range of voices which are now being critical against Mr. Mugabe is very interesting, isn't it? You've got all those graduates out on the street saying there's no opportunity for young, intelligent professionals in Zimbabwe. You've also got now war veterans, you know, traditionally the staunch supporters of Mr. Mugabe, also saying it is time, chief, to stand aside and let the younger generation come through.
Oh, absolutely. For a long time, the opposition has been coming from the MDC and related parties.
This is the Movement for Democratic Change.
The Movement for Democratic Change, that's correct. But what we have seen in recent months is that we are having people who used to sit on the fence, people who were generally apolitical, who did not want to get involved in national affairs, becoming more and more involved, raising their voices. The church is becoming even more vocal. And that's important because it's bringing in a new voice to the whole movement that is challenging the government. In terms of the war veterans, that is a big change that has taken place because they have been some of the biggest beggars of Mr. Mugabe for many years. And suddenly they have said, no, it's time to go. This is an important voice, and you can see the influence and the impact by the manner in which Mr. Mugabe's government has responded by arresting the leadership of the War Veterans Association, because they realise that this is a big threat. This is a big game changer.
OK, that said, Robert Mugabe has seen off various challenges to his leadership over the years from within the country. He's won at least six elections. Some would dispute how many of them were totally free and fair. But from outside the country, he's also faced constant criticism from other world leaders, particularly since his land reform programme in the 2000, reclaiming land from white farmers. That led to international sanctions, increasingly hostile relations with Europe and the West. But he hangs on. As he's aged, though, even now the state broadcaster, ZBC, has had to begin sensitively asking him about the succession, what's going to happen when he leaves. Here he is responding to a question about his retirement plans to mark his 92nd birthday earlier this year. And he does drift into Shona for the punchline, which Shona speakers will appreciate most of all, I suspect.
When we went to Congress in 2013, and the people said, you are the candidate. I did not say I was a candidate only to retire. I didn't never say that. I was a candidate for the term. The term is a five-year term, isn't it? Why do you want a successor? Well, don't you grow it, Bagero Gugirabas, to feel I'm still there.
Alex enjoyed that. At the end of the clip there, President Mugabe is jokingly threatening to punch the interviewer to prove that he's still strong and full of vitality. And Wilf Mbanga, you can't deny that Mr. Mugabe has tremendous charisma. He's charming, he's funny, and that still does connect with people, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, you have to talk to people from the MDC who were part of unity government. And I remember Tendai Biti, who was the Minister of Finance, saying that Mugabe bowled him over, you know. And so, you know, he's a charming man. He is funny. He's got a very keen brain. but he's slowed down a lot. I mean, even from the way he speaks. I mean, he speaks like a very old man. And he should be resting and playing with his grandchildren.
That is a fair argument, isn't it, Tafadzawa Muzarara? Is it fair to expect a man in his 90s to deal with all the sorts of challenges facing Zimbabwe? And would you like to see the next president rule for such a long time, or would you favour a fixed term like they have in the United States?
Well, I think what is very clear here is that the presidency of Robert Gabriel Mugabe is valid and it can stand any constitutional scrutiny. The second issue also is that we have the Queen of England, who is probably a year or two younger or older than President Robert Mugabe, and superintends the Commonwealth with more than 400 million people. President Mugabe is only have a 14 million country. So there are a number of other leaders who are that age. But anyway, what is key is the ability of one person to execute the job that expected of his office to undertake. And when we went for elections in 2013, we knew that by this time of the year, you will be 92. And the electoral courts and all everyone else agreed that President Mugabe qualified to be a candidate. We also have younger people like Mr. Tsvangirai, who is younger, much younger than President Mugabe, maybe young enough to be his son, but he is not in the best of health. So really, it is not only about age, it is about the individual and the ability to steer the levers of the power and of the state.
Okay, and if you look at the party that you support, the governing party, ZANU-PF, they must be preparing for what happens after Mr. Mugabe, because he is only human and he can only go on for so long.
The succession issue in Zambia, you see, it is very interesting how other people are so keen to know about the succession in ZANU-PF, and it points to one thing, that they know that the next leader will come from ZANU-PF. The second issue also is that the issue of succession in ZANU-PF is very clear. The party, we have its own time to elect a leader. However, the issues of trying to preoccupied with the issues of who should be next, really, at the same time when the opposition voices like Magaisa, Wilf, and Fadzai are saying that the leadership must focus on the pressing economic issues, we can't have both running at the same time.
You say the next leader will definitely come from ZANU-PF. Are now two distinct factions, is the way people are describing this, developing within ZANU-PF. Wilf Mbanga, for those watching this from outside, just explain how this party is sort of splitting in two directions and who leads which faction and who's backing them.
One group supports Emmerson Mnangagwa, one of the vice presidents, and it's called the La Costa Group, or the Crocodile. The other group is made up of the younger generation within ZANU-PF. They call themselves the G40 group, Generation 40. They don't seem to have a preferred candidate, but we know that they are supporting Grace Mugabe. But there are others who are probably using her as a stalking horse, people like Jonathan Moyo and so on.
Grace Mugabe being the wife of the president.
The wife of the president, yes. She's denied that she's got any presidential ambitions. And so has Emmerson Mnangagwa. He's also said, he's actually at the weekend announced that he had nothing to do with that La Costa group. He's not part of it. He doesn't want to know them. But that's just strategy. I mean, that's all politicians say that.
OK, just briefly, Tafadzwa, do you prefer either of those two as a potential contender?
Those who are alleged to be leading those functions have openly and publicly and vehemently denied any connections to those functions. What is very, very clear and apparent also is the fact that the generality of all people supporting ZANU-PF are fully behind the Solomonic leadership of Robert Gabriel Mugabe. That is very clear. So, yes, because it's a big party, everyone knows that it is the current, it is the past, and definitely it is the future. You might hate it, but definitely you can't ignore it. People will tend to make sometimes misinformed comments. But what is very clear is that ZANU-PF is very clear on one cent of power, and that one cent of power subsists to the benefit and to the sustenance of this revolutionary party.
Okay, Alex, let's come to you for a moment and what you make of these two particular individuals, because the newspapers are full of all sorts of gossip as to who's swinging in behind which potential leader or the other. Grace Mugabe, of course, and then Emmerson Mnangagwa, current vice president. He's had all sorts of jobs in government over the years. He was the Minister of State Security between 1980 to 1988, and that was during this highly controversial action in the west of the country in Matabele land. Does he enjoy a lot of support from the party and also other factions in the country, perhaps the military?
Well, you know, firstly, Mr. Mnangagwa has been in politics for a long time. He has said himself 54 years, and he has been alongside Mr. Mugabe for a very long time. So I've called it a special relationship between the two men, although it has its ups and downs. He has been known to be a hard man, a tough character. But in recent months, we have also seen that he's also vulnerable. Over the years, we have seen that he struggles to win electoral support, and he has lost elections on two occasions in a small constituency, which has dented his credentials as someone who is electable. And his critics in ZANU-PF always point to this as his Achilles heel. So he does have challenges, but he also has powerful backers, as you have said. He's been minister for a long time, including state security, defense, and others. He's supported by some in the military, we are told. He also has backing in the state media. We have seen that. They're quite partial to him. And so even though he is vulnerable at the moment, he still has a lot of important support in important pockets of the country. However, Grace Mugabe, the president's wife, although she seems to have power at the moment, I call it borrowed power. She's wearing borrowed robes from her husband. The moment her husband leaves the scene, she will be open and she will be very vulnerable. We will have a situation that happened in China after the death of Chairman Mao. And I think that she has
and Mrs. Mao, his wife, sort of had positioned herself to take over, but was dealt with very swiftly by her opponents.
Very swiftly, and she had serious trouble. I've written and warned that she should be more careful in how she deals with this situation, because she may be putting herself up for attack after her husband is gone.
OK, so those are two names that are definitely being spoken about. But Fadzai Mahere, we heard earlier on in the hour from legendary musician Thomas Mfumo. He was focusing on the youth participation in politics and the fact that it's young people out on the street demanding a better future. All these people we're speaking about are getting on in years, aren't they? They've been knocking around a long time. What do the young people want to see?
I think ideally the young people would like to see a completely fresh face. All of the options that have been spoken of so far are old or rehashed individuals who really present and offer no new solutions. So you've got the vice president, Mr. Mnangagwa, for instance. I mean, what can he possibly do as president that he's been failing to do as he sat in cabinet all these years? So we'd really like to see a completely fresh face. And we have to first hear, critique, and understand what their policies are before we can make a decision. What plan, what trajectory do they have for the future of Zimbabwe? Because what you have with the politicians that have, whose names have been offered so far, is an insistence on history. They keep going back to the war, they keep going back to the old rehashed arguments, and in doing so completely forget that somebody needs to take care of, to take custody of Zimbabwe's future. It seems as though they're just bent on looking after themselves until they go without a proper plan for the next generation. So we'd really like to see a fresh face onto the political scene.
Do you have some practical problems with allowing that voice to emerge? I mean, is the political climate conducive to somebody setting out their stall, as you say, and emerging as a new political force? Would that be allowed to happen in Zimbabwe at the moment?
Well, all we can do is hope, isn't it? Because the Constitution certainly permits this. It allows us this space. So all we can do is continue to fight until the space that's rightfully ours is given to us. That's all we can do. What we certainly cannot allow is ourselves to sit back and to wait and to expect that, you know, they will sort it out. There's nothing we can do, so we just shy away from the problem. We have to confront it head on. We need to speak out. We need to offer solutions. We need to insist on being heard. We need to call out irresponsible policy the minute it happens. I think the difference, as you asked earlier, with the more recent people-led movements is that people are not afraid to speak out. People are watching every single step the government is taking and critiquing it and questioning it and, you know, putting out there their discontent where it's justified. So okay. Even though it seems like it's not practical, what the youth are certainly not going to do, what the people are certainly not going to do is sit back. And okay. I'm certain it may be a matter of time, but things will change.
Wilf Mbanga, someone I was speaking to about Zimbabwe earlier on this week described the situation politically as dangerously fluid. And I suppose there is a danger, isn't there, that if the succession isn't sort of worked out before Mr. Mugabe is removed from power, either by God or by some other means, there could end up being a power vacuum. And what might that do to the country?
Well, I see people with guns stepping in. See, the problem is everybody knows that, you know, the end is for Mugabe is nigh. That's why that these two factions in ZANU-PF fighting, you know, desperately to position themselves to take over. They want to get in, make sure that they're in right now as soon as Mugabe drops dead. If Mugabe should drop dead, what's likely to happen? I see guns blazing in Harare.
OK, let's put that to our other panellists. Where do you see this going, Alex?
Well, I think the succession issue in ZANU-PF is an important national issue. The constitution says if a vacancy arises in the presidency, then the ruling party will have to choose. It's not an national election, but it's a party election, a party process. Now, we don't know what that party process is, and the factions are jostling for power, and that could lead to a lot of chaos.
Do you see guns blazing, as Wilf suggests?
Well, you know, the military have been quiet. Things are simmering. There's been a lot of discipline over the years. Nothing to suggest that they would be fighting. But who knows? You know, what we do know is that some people in the military are also politically ambitious, and they have been positioning themselves to be involved in the succession race, something that Mr. Mugabe himself has confirmed when he admonished generals who are involved in ZANU-PF succession politics. So, yes, it's a possibility that there could be serious problems for the country.
Tafad Zawa, your thoughts on this?
Well, look, I mean, with due respect to my colleagues, I don't agree with what they're saying. Soon after the elections of 2002, the BBC predicted mayhem in Zimbabwe and that the economy was going to collapse. And today, we are 14 years later, the economy, the country still stands. However, you should appreciate that the biggest Christmas present that has been given to ZANU-PF by opposition is merely their lack of direction and their fragmented status and their lack of cohesion on what should happen. You look at this so-called latest movements. There's this gown, there's this tajamuka, there's this flag, and you simply wonder why people can't congregate under one banner and express the...
You know. Are you worried about a power vacuum, though, given
the interest
in the country?
Our constitution is very clear. We have got two vice presidents who are both competent to be the president and to lead the country in the interim, should God decide to take our dear president. But BBC and definitely other Western media organizations have been killing a mosquito, the bazooka, in this instance. And it's very unfortunate that the situation in Zimbabwe, challenges as they may be present, but the situation has always been exaggerated. ZANU-PF is very formidable. And its conviction is grounded in liberating this country and also ensuring that economic independence and the social rights. So it enjoys a very massive support. It's only that its population or support base is not much in this Twitter and the online business. But really, we wait to see how they would be able to mobilize online support to on-street support.
Okay, Fadzai, you hear that. You can't disagree with that, surely. ZANU-PF is formidable. Let's say President Mugabe does live to be 100. That's another 8 years. Putting aside his wife's recent suggestion that he could rule from beyond the grave, I think she said, who will be ruling Zimbabwe in 2024, 2025?
Well, I think it's too early to say. Like I said, we'd need people to first put their names in a hat. It has to be said, though, that contrary to Mr. Msarara's suggestion and attempt to minimize or diminish the importance of the most recent people-led protests, the president himself has castigated these protests publicly. He recognizes the extent of the threat. He has called people who are protesting an enemy. Somebody who's got no influence at all can never be your enemy. The president himself, contrary to his subordinates and people who support him like Msarara, recognizes that the people have a voice, and that voice will be problematic if their concerns are not dealt with. So it's certainly too early to say which specific individual will take over from the president. But what is certainly clear is there's huge and growing discontent. And unlike before, where people were, you know, stopped in their tracks by fear, people are simply not afraid anymore. People are willing to put their lives on the line. People are willing to go out and protest. People are willing to speak out and say that what's going on is unjust, it's unconstitutional, it's corrupt, it's wrong, and something needs to be done, and quickly.
Okay. Thank you so much, everybody, for your contributions to this NewsHour Extra on Zimbabwe. We're out of time, I'm afraid. But thank you so much to our guest there in Harare, Fadzai Maheri, Tafadzwa Muserera, Will from Bangor joining us on the line from Durban, South Africa, and Alex Magisa here in the studio in London. Thank you all very, very much indeed for joining us. And if you'd like to listen to the programme again or from the archive, you can listen back at bbcworldservice.com/newshour extra. And if you like this week's programme, make sure you never miss it again with our subscription podcast. You can find it simply by searching for NewsHour Extra in your podcast app. While you're there, please leave us a review or a rating because it helps other people discover the programme. We'd love to hear all your thoughts on NewsHour Extra or any topics you'd like us to look into. Just send us an email to the team, newshour.extra@bbc.co.uk, and let us know what you'd like to hear and also perhaps what you don't like listening to on the programme. But from me, Rebecca Kesby, and the whole team here in London, that's NewsHour Extra for this week. Thanks for listening.